if there's somebody really good and they want to have a lifestyle change, and COVID has taught us that you don't need to be attached to a desk and you don't need to be physically in an office. If we haven't learned that, we seriously got something wrong. Look, I'm not saying we've escaped it at the agency. I think we've been able to keep them, not because we're better than the other real estate business, not that at all, but we've just listened to our people.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. With thanks to our partner Connect Now, Elevate brings you the best tools, thinking and strategies to elevate your results. To get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast, visit joinEliteAgent.com. And for more information about how Connect Now can make moving easier on your clients, visit connectnow.com.au. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey everyone, Sam here. There is rarely a dull day in real estate. Every day there is interesting data, insights and stories to be told, as you guys will know from reading the brief. But often there's more to it than the headlines and the facts. And at Elite Agent, we want to go deeper into how the outside world impacts the world of real estate with people that have been in the industry for a significant amount of time. So today, my guest is someone who's been on our podcast quite a few times, and that's CEO of the agency, Matt LaHood. And Matt and I will be catching up regularly on the podcast to go deeper into some of the stories where there are real estate lessons, impacts, and takeaways. And we'll also be going deeper into the real estate headlines, how they're playing out on the ground and in the trenches. So I'm pretty excited about this. Matt, welcome to the first episode of what we're calling Behind the News.
Thanks, Sam. Always exciting to join you and share what we can to help the viewers and listeners to, you know, impact their day-to-day life and see if we can add some value, as always, you know?
Absolutely. As you and I well know, and we've talked about this a number of times, is that, you know, you get the headline stuff from people like CoreLogic, et cetera, and then how it plays out in the trenches is quite different, yeah?
Yes. Yeah, well, sometimes, look, what's happening day to day is reported a bit later, and that's just how life is, isn't it? You know, like you can see something happening, then you read about it like maybe a month later. So that's why I think leadership, you know, is one thing. It's very important to stay at the coalface as a leader, because you don't want to be hearing things a month or 6 weeks later, because it takes a long time to turn things around if you're too far past the market and it's turning every week, which is what's happening at the moment.
As we all know, and you've got your finger on the pulse of this quite a lot, is that around Australia, you know, the mainstream media might give a headline like values have fallen off the cliff and all that sort of thing to scare everyone. And then as you and I know, in different pockets, it all plays out very differently.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so micro Australia. You've got parts that are flying at the moment. You got parts that are not, that are slowed right down, which you wouldn't expect it to slow down. And you, things like investors out of the market, you think they'd be all diving in at the moment because the rents are so high and there's nothing to rent. But, you know, that's a phenomenon that we've seen come along. We've seen the top end of the market very bullish because they're not really governed by interest rates. Doesn't really matter if you're 10 plus million, you're not worried about 0.5% or a quarter here or there. So that end's really trading bullish. Probably the strongest I've seen it in 30 years, Sam, at the moment, the top end. We've done a few 25, 30, 15, 17, that sort of dollars. That's serious money, right?
Yeah.
And it seems to be easy, not easy, that's a fair, unfair word, but it seems to be as easy to sell something at 25 to 30 at the moment than it was to sell something, you know, for 7 to, you know, 1.5, 12 months ago.
Yeah. I mean, there was such a strong start to the year all round and everyone was tipping that prices would continue to rise. Like I was actually, before we jumped on, I was looking at our stats and I was sort of thinking in January, everyone was still saying that values were going to go up, up and up. And then all of a sudden the Reserve Bank tipped some water on that fire back in May.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us, you know, like what have you seen in some of the areas where the agency operates?
I'll give you a real quick snapshot. So let's go state by state. Perth holding very well and strong still. Slightly coming off, but nowhere near. Sydney and Melbourne's come obviously right off. But then in the last week, so we're talking, we're doing this 6th of October. In the last week to Seb, we had an interest rate rise yesterday, of course. However, because it was only 0.25%, I think what we're going to see now in Sydney and Melbourne, we saw the clearance rate just lift over 60% in both of those states. So Tasmania, it's come back a bit as well. And South Australia is still very strong right now. Canberra, about same as it was sort of like, let's say, you know, beginning of this year, but probably not as bullish as it was the 12 months before. So we've got a few phenomenons there. Queensland is definitely, in my view, probably the strongest market right now in Australia, with Perth. I would say those two markets are outliers. I think there's a lot of people still moving north. And, you know, I don't know if it's too far out from the Olympics or whatever, but there's a definitely a view that Queensland, and I say Brisbane, Sunshine Coast, Gold Coast, all the way through, there's demand. Because I speak to my Queensland agents every week, and I had a chat to somebody in our Sunshine Coast operation, and they just said, look, most of their buyers are still coming from the south. So we've seen Brisbane and Perth both outliers. I think Perth, I can actually have analysed it, because you know how they came out of lockdown a bit longer than everyone else. They've still got that uplift of activity where the other markets have come off. Now, Sydney, Melbourne, obviously very strong auction markets. They did dip dramatically and they've just started to come back. I think what we'll see now is, of course, the interest rates haven't gone up a full 0.5%. That could signal a little bit of confidence that we could be nearing the end. There probably will be some more. So people might just decide, hang on, it's not as bad as we thought. We'll start to come back in. And they're probably doing this for one reason is we're six weeks out from Christmas. So they can't keep putting these rates up, really, I would have thought. And I'm not an economist, but I guess I know enough to be dangerous, like all of us, what you read, is that if you keep putting interest rates right up the week before Christmas, I don't think retail is going to have a good time. But I would think logically, that would be how we'd all think, yeah?
Yeah, well, that was going to be my next question, actually. What do you think will happen between now and Christmas? Because the last CoreLogic numbers have just come out as we record this, and it seems like, you know, although values had kind of been declining, they still declined last month, but at a less declining rate, if that makes any sense.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Sammy. That's probably what will happen. It's definitely the heat's come out. I think there's still a lot, because I actually myself go out into the market. I've got a couple of clients that are selling at the moment, and I'm out there doing opens because I want to hear what the buyers are saying. So when I'm talking a la to yourself and anyone else in the marketplace that needs to hear from us and my team, I need to know what's actually happening. And that's talking about leadership. And I do feel that leaders right now need to kick the covers off and get out and amongst the people, because you can actually hear what's happening in real time. And there are buyers that are saying, look, they're still, like I was at an auction two Saturdays ago where the buyer said, we're just worried about what's going to happen in October for the next rate rise. So that was 2 weeks out. So it's definitely front and center of people's minds. So once that stops going up, which hopefully November we'll probably see the last one this side of Christmas, we'll probably just see the market, people go, all right, well, they'll redo their finances. They'll see how much they can borrow. Because the problem is everyone forgets, Sam, that when these rates go up, the buyer's borrowing capacity gets re-rated. That's something we've had to coach our vendors around, because they think if someone's got a approval for I can borrow $1 million, well, that was 2 months ago at, you know, 2% less or whatever. Now it's gone up, you know, 2% more in sort of 3 months, what have you. They can't borrow as much. So they might be at 850 now. So they physically can't pay any more for a property, and that's where these gaps have started to appear.
I think the thing is too, like we just recently, you know, decided to move out of a rental and buy a place up here in Queensland. And, you know, at the beginning of our property search, we were sort of thinking, well, the bank's approved us for this much. So, you know, like, let's go, like, you know, and we were looking at the top of that approval limit. And then all of a sudden, interest rates start going up and up and up. And, you know, Mark and I are kind of looking at each other going, actually, I think we better leave ourselves a bit of headroom in case these interest rates go up some more. Yeah. So, you know, is that, are we alone in thinking that way, or are you seeing other buyers sort of thinking that way too?
Definitely, that's one way. The other way is, though, is a lot of buyers are saying, hang on, we should probably push to buy now rather than wait, because they won't have the amount that they can borrow. So they're getting into something that they can get into now, because if they do keep going up, they mightn't be able to buy what they want now in 6 months or 3 months' time. So, and yes, the values have come down, but they went up, what, 30% Sydney and Melbourne. They've only come back about 10 to 15. So they're still 15 up on 2 years ago, which I don't know if they're going to come down too much further, because there's still not a lot of people that have charged out and put their properties on the market. Now, the other phenomenon we need to address, Sam, is that there's a lot of people who bought 2 years ago on very low interest rates fixed. Now, I had a look at the Commonwealth Bank report the other day. They peak December next year. So their fixed rates are all coming off fixed rates. The peak is December 2023. So people are either got to make a decision next 12 months. Can they afford the new rate that they'll be paying in December 23? These are the people who bought 3 years ago and took 3 year fixed. Will they have to sell? So there's going to be some decisions made. So if they do have to sell, hopefully not forced sell, but have to sell in terms of, because I just can't afford it, that could bring more property onto the market, which could have a further reduction of the values. Yeah. That would be my educated guess right now.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because my numbers say, again, going back over some of our stories, that there's about $200 billion worth of fixed loans which will revert to variable about that time, which is quite a lot.
Yeah. In that same Commonwealth Bank snapshot report I saw, what was interesting was, because they're charting consumer spending, goods and services were up, and services were down. So that shows to me people still buying things, furniture, et cetera, you know, goods, cars, et cetera. Services, the trend was going down, like, quite dramatically. So that's movies, restaurants, discretionary spending, you know, cleaning. So what do we got? Services, all the services. So that's interesting. So that could be a trend to be looking at as well.
That's all pretty interesting. And I guess, you know, so it's like, it's well, like a lot of the coaches will tell you, and even in CoreLogic and stuff, will sort of say regularly that people don't move houses, you know, for what, 6, 7, 8, 9, sometimes more years, depending on the area that you're in. I mean, you know, look, I know we were trying to look at Runaway Bay, but you know, there's only one way that you can get into Runaway Bay, right? You
gotta wait, I love for someone, that area.
You know, like, it's beautiful up there.
You have to get a boat if you live in Runaway Bay, Sam. Is Mark aware of that?
Don't tell anyone. So,
no.
very, very tightly held up there. I think that's what you agents call it, tightly held.
That's it.
So obviously, I think agents are probably going to need a really good strategy for staying in touch with people over the next 12 months. And you don't want to just ring and go, oh, hey, it's Sam here, and just touching base with you, how are you going? Because, you know, like, I interviewed someone, you know, a couple of years ago, and she said, I wish people would stop touching people's bases. It's just not cool.
I think the best way for people to do that is, and obviously social media is so easily accessible to people now, all your clients that you've got in social, if you just every weekend you do a little video on, like, snapshot of your opens, just say, hey, great turnout today. Hey, not as many this weekend. Hey, sold 4 out of 6. Hey, passed one, sold 2 out of 6. And just quick little grabs. People have got time to look at that, and it's not offensive, and they can choose. I think today the consumer wants to choose whether they look at you or not, rather than be forced to look at you. That's yep. it. So if you're adding content which is valuable, it could be, you know, the Sam McLean market update on Saturday at 4 o'clock, and you post that, I'm more likely to look at a 30-second grab of somebody doing an open home, so a view of the last 4 opens they did on Saturday, if I'm thinking of selling, rather than being called and say, hey, how are you going, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So that would be my way of, and I coach my team to do that, as many And even a video of your open, like not a full video, like just a quick zoom around saying, wow, busy today, there's lots of buyers out. Or, you know, hey, not that many buyers today. Keep you posted if the market improves or whatever it may be. It's just real because it's real. You're doing an open and you're not manufacturing. People love to see, you know, then you can do an auction, video your auction, and they can see it's spirited bidding or not spirited bidding. Or I see some agents are putting copies of their contracts on, obviously blanking names out, which we would remember about confidentiality, but showing they sold a property on the first weekend and they put the contract on social media. I think things like that, people love to see that. That's transparent business.
Well, I think too that with social media, you know, if you're consistent as well, like people, and you know, you've boosted it to the right place, which is your local community, yeah. People will see it. And I guess that's a lot better than the agent who sort of goes back home or to the pub on a Saturday and doesn't do anything. I mean, 5 minutes could literally sort of change your life over the next couple of years.
I think it is life-changing, Sam. If you do a report and it's consistent, the biggest thing with these reports is consistency. It's no point doing one week and then doing one another 3 weeks. And if they know that they're going to see your face and your report, and it's not necessarily you standing there like a statue or a mannequin, you know, going, hi, today we had blah, blah. It's not about that. It's like zoom around, show the auctioneer, show a few people going in the opens, bang, done. And just a quick wrap up. People don't have time today to sit, read, stand, and listen to a whole lot of fluff. Yeah. And I think the quicker the agents understand that, and less about you, more about the owners. And see, from the owners that you're selling for, that's a good thing too, that you're promoting their properties live, showing that there's interest and so forth and so on. Because hopefully if you're a smart agent, you've got your hot buyers following you on social as well. So they're seeing what's going on, you know?
Absolutely. There's two other big things that have been in the news recently that I'd like to sort of have a bit of a jam with you about. One of them is about vacancy rates and the rental crisis. Like that's been a big theme.
Yes.
Over the last couple of months. We've never seen supply issues like this before. What's happening with Maria at the team in PM at the agency? Are rental properties like the toilet paper of 2022 there?
Absolutely. And Sam, the thing is, I've done a real close study. Maria's just expanding the team and things, and she's really busy just keeping all the property managers and everybody just literally focused on what they're doing, because they've got full capacity at the moment with their properties. There's very few vacancies at the moment. What's actually caused it? I've had a couple of people asking me that, and I've really dug into it. Luckily, one thing I've got an advantage, both of my kids are in leasing, so I'm hearing every night at dinner what's happening. They're getting road rage at every open. They're getting more like 30s and 40s and 20s and people offering them more money than what's the properties on the market at, a whole lot of things. However, what's actually caused it is this. We've got interest rates going up, so the first home buyers are not buying, right? We've got investors who haven't been in the market, right? So they're not buying investment properties, right? They're out of the market. Then you've got a lot of the tenants, which it's the first time I've seen this in 30 years. My kids are coming back and saying, oh, Dad, we've got this tenant today and he's just sold a house for $10 million and he wants to rent for 2 years. So I haven't seen that, Sam, for a long time, where a lot of our sellers are renting. So you've got them in the market, you've got first home buyers not buying, then you've got them renting as well, and then you've got investors not buying, so we don't have, so we've got this pressure cooker situation. Now, that's before we've really got immigration and people coming back to our unis and everything. So we haven't had that really happen yet. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen then. So this is what's actually causing it.
I've heard anecdotally of, you know, people selling their rental properties, particularly in Queensland, because we've sort of had all that nonsense with land tax and, you know, and all across Australia we've seen rental laws changing and things like that. Do you think investors are just going, too hard, I'm out of here, I'm going to go and put my money somewhere else?
Well, a lot of them have actually taken the rental properties off the market and their kids have moved in there. So there's another thing. I don't know if the market has noticed that, but because you know we've had a couple of owners say, "Hey, listen, I'm taking it off the market, and a kid's going to move in, or what have you." And a lot of them that have sold their properties have moved into their rental properties whilst they're waiting, and they might have a view that the market's going to come back further before they actually look to buy a bit later on or what have you. So there's a very noisy marketplace in the rental space at the moment, and it's a whole lot of combinations of these types of things. And the other thing, there's one more thing. The developers have stopped developing, right, a lot of them, which has stopped more housing coming available for investors, and that stopped. So, yeah, very – and I don't know how it's going to get any better at the moment. There's not going to be more housing released. The interest rates aren't coming down, so first-time buyers aren't going to get out of the rental market and go and buy. Yeah, interesting scenario.
Yeah, very interesting scenario. And I guess, you know, like something has to give, I think, if not this year, but in 2023. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. Because I sort of think, too, that there's always been this narrative of the big bad landlord and the poor tenant. And, you know, that often the landlord is just, you know, just average people like you and me.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Who are just having a go.
So that phenomenon, Sam, too, of owners like selling a property for $5, $6, $3, $2 million, doesn't matter what price. I was just interested that the upper end market is renting. Like they're looking for big homes to rent for $2,000-$3,000 a week. There's a shortage of $2,000-$3,000 a week properties to rent, which that is unusual, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that for a long time. And the tenant is people that have sold. And when you sort of ask them, oh, we're just going to cool our jets and see what happens to the market in the next couple of years. So we're going to rent for 2 years. Rather than charging out to buy, and they might have also be thinking they can't find anything either.
Yeah.
And they might want to be caught in the interest rate upward movement either, which I don't know, you know. So there's a combination, very interesting.
It would almost be cheaper to jump on a cruise ship and live your life on, except that there's still COVID, yeah.
I don't know if it's near Runaway Bay or the back of SeaWorld there. There's those houseboats. Have you seen them floating around?
Yeah, I have actually. Yeah. some of them are bigger than some of the shoebox apartments I lived in when I was like in my 20s.
So they might be the new phenomenon, come and live on the river. I mean, I don't think there's any land tax or water rates or council rates or anything, is there, on the river?
Yeah, you just got to keep moving. Like you can't stay in a certain area for more than 2 days.
So. You can, you know, feed yourself overboard. You can fish off the edge.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. All right, the final one before we sort of get onto our like little leadership theme of the episode is this trend towards. Well, it started as the Great Resignation. So people were just going, life's too short. I don't want to be in this job anymore.
Yep.
That's kind of morphed into something that people are referring to as quiet quitting, which means I'm not going to resign from my job, but I am going to sort of work to rule 9 to 5, take my power back, however you want to,
yes,
you know, however you want to, however you want to phrase that. While this has been going on too, and I'll come back to the question in a second, but the agency's actually expanded. So like we've actually been sort of tracking your news as well.
Yeah.
So you've expanded into Tasmania and Canberra.
Yes.
And yeah, so talk to me about, you know, like what have you heard about this trend towards the Great Resignation and quiet quitting and so on and so on?
Look, I've exactly heard it. I've witnessed it in some instances. But Sam, look, I personally take an approach, and I know the agency does, is I'm very happy for our people to be flexible. I mean, I went through COVID like everyone else. No one's immune to it. You know, as a leader, it wasn't easy to be a leader during COVID, trust me. Wasn't sure whether it'd be operating in 3 months after it or not. I probably learned some of my best lessons in COVID. How to be up against the wall and not sure, you know, whether you're going to be operating or who you can whether we could pay everyone or whether we have to put people up. Touch wood, thank God we didn't have to lose anyone in that process. We kept everyone and we grew from there. And we actually, as we all know, the real estate market probably helped a lot of us. However, I think leaders need to have a flexible attitude to work. Like, I'll give you a quick example. Maria and I sat down and we said, look, Maria, you know, there's a lot of people that just don't want to come in the office during property management because, they're worried about picking up, COVID, what have you. And then during that process, Sammy, a lot of people found they were more productive because they can get up, go straight to work, and be in their environment where they're comfortable and flexible. And we sort of looked at each other and we said, look, let's look at this and say, we've got some really good people. We don't want to lose them. If we force them to come back, we don't want them to not. What we want to do is make sure they're doing their very best job for the client, and that we as leaders and managers are not having to deal with any issues because they're not doing their job. And if we can be guaranteed of that, I mean, does it really matter if they sit on Mars and be a property manager? So we pulled the whole team in together and we said, let's do a show of hands. Who wants to work from home and who wants to work from the office? Because we will adjust our retail space and our commercial space based on what you tell us. So don't be half about this. If you want to work from home, happy to do it, but we'll be reducing your seat. So we won't have a seat, right? So half of the sort of room put their hands up and said, no, got kids, got this, got that, have to have the social interaction coming to work, right? And the other half went, we'd like some flexibility. We'd still like a desk, but we'd like to have 2 days a week. And some of the others said, I'll work from home for the rest of my career, right? So Maria and I looked at each other and we said, all right, let's have, so touch wood, I don't think in hindsight lost many people at all because we adjusted to the flexible. There was, I know a lot of people came out and I've seen social and others just, no, you've got to be back in the office. It's a get back to the office. But I think offices can be distracting for a lot of people too, Sam. Like, water cooler conversations aren't that productive in real estate. Trust me, being an agent for 25 years, most of my agents that are really successful get in, they put their headphones on, they go to the calls, and they wouldn't know who's around them, the really uber successful salespeople. Property managers, same. They got their headsets on and they're just pounding away, tenants, owners. So, really, I mean, the only thing is that it is during the lunch break or something is a bit of a chit chat and a bit of talking banter. So there's that, which is a missing part. So how did we fix that problem? Everyone gets together once a month and has a breakfast and everything as a group. And then every week they do a training session on Zoom or live, depends. The live ones are in, but the rest are on Zoom. So then we just cater for everyone. So look, I'm not saying we've escaped it at the agency, but I would rather, if there's somebody really good and they want to have a lifestyle change, and COVID has taught us that you don't need to be attached to a desk and you don't need to be physically in an office. That's one thing if we haven't learned that, we've seriously got something wrong. And it's also taught some of us that we can be more productive. So, I'm not suggesting we won't cop the, property management's been a tough gig to find staff, but I think we've been able to keep them, not because we're better than the other real estate business, not that at all, but we've just listened to our people. And I think that's what you got to do in any business, and not be dictators and mandates and all this sort of stuff's finished in any business. People don't want to be dictated to. They need to be mentored and coached. That's different. But dictated and mandated to, there's too much flexibility and opportunity around, and you will lose people unless you listen to them.
Yeah. So instead of like being sort of like a top down barking orders at people, it's like listening to people and sort of trying to fit in with, like how they're going to perform best.
Look, Sam, I've got this great thing I think that I've learned years ago now. Every time we do an acquisition or we bring a new group into our business and they've already been doing it along, I just sit down with the sales team and say, hey, how do you want to run this sales meeting? Do you want to do it weekly, fortnightly? Do you want it for an hour? Do you want to do it for 45 minutes? Do you want to do it on Zoom? And then show of hands wins the game. And then there can be no excuse that somebody didn't turn up because I'm doing it my way.
Yep.
I'll give you the best version of a sales meeting, and my sales leaders will do that for you if you tell me what you want. Do you want to go through stock? Do you not want to go through stock? Do you want to talk about what's working in the market? Do you want to do around the grounds? Just want to have coffee and toast and just talk rubbish for an hour? Is that what? Because that's sometimes the best form of sales management. is everybody throws their problems in the middle. I have a saying, you know, if everybody throws their problems in the middle, you'll quickly take yours back when you hear everyone else's. That's one of my favourites because, you know, everyone says, I've got a problem, then you hear someone else's problem, you go, I'll take mine back. That wasn't that bad, you know, sort of thing.
So, you win.
You know, yeah, sometimes it's good to have a sales meeting where you just talk about what's working and what's not, and you don't talk about listings or anything. And that's usually the best sales meetings, and people love those sort of environments, you know.
Speaking of new people at the agency, I don't think he's actually new to the agency, but in a new role, slid into my inbox on the weekend. You know, he just joined Elite Agent Pro and he said he was the head of sustainable homes. And so I'm talking about Sasha. Can you tell us a little bit about that and his role? Like, because I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, Sasha's joined in Canberra and made an impact pretty quickly down there. So that's one of the markets that we're not involved in, but he's brought that to the agency, specifically Canberra focused. So there's I think eventually that's going to be something we're going to probably that will roll out around the country. But he's just come in that environment where we've got a serious team in Canberra around project marketing. We're heavily focused there because a couple of people that reached out to us to bring the brand down there felt that their projects could benefit, as the sustainable homes could benefit from outside inquiry coming to Canberra, especially when the investor market's so strong there with the government jobs. And being obviously, you know, I think 70 plus, maybe even more higher government jobs down there. That's why the rental market's so strong and the purchasing market's so strong. And the sustainable homes, if you were going to test that sort of anywhere, Canberra's the place to have that environment. So I'm not around the actual specifics of how it all works because Sasha's only a new entrant into us, but I'll be definitely catching up and learning a lot more of it. But I think that's the future though, yeah?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Like I've sort of been tracking the trend for sustainable homes for years now within Elite Agent and even outside of Elite Agent. And, I actually think we should get him on the podcast at some point just to talk about, you know, like what he's doing and the general trend towards that sort of thing. Because, you know, if Australia's going to get to net zero by 2050 or whatever it is, net zero carbon emissions, it's going to be guys like him, hopefully, that are leading the way.
Well, it's good because, see, Canberra, if you're going to test something and get it through, that's the place to get the mandate of it done, because then you can roll it out to the rest of the country once Canberra's signed off on what's sustainable and what's not. Doesn't get any better than that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So so finally, like, I want to wrap it up with, you know, something else that's happening in the news that you know, like, I think has an impact on the real estate industry. And because we're catching up a few times this year and next year to do this, I'll let you pick the topic next time.
Yeah,
but,
that's fine.
but for this time, I've picked the topic which is quite current, of the royal family. Now, I'm not a royalist. I don't know whether you are or not, but there's some interesting lessons in leadership going on with the royal family right now, which I don't know if I'm, you know, sort of dreaming or whatever, but I sort of feel like there's plenty of parallels in what's going on there in the real estate industry. So the royal family have recently lost the equivalent of their Elon Musk, you know, a dynamic leader for a very long time. And, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, like, we've got issues coming up, like, how to manage the initial crisis, succession planning. Like, you know, I'm sure that the succession plan for King Charles has been in place for a very long time. You know, how does a new leader win the hearts and minds of, the team that are around them, et cetera, et cetera. So let's talk about this for a second, because you've been in that same situation yourself.
Yeah.
If you were King Charles right now, taking on this new leadership role of a business, because the royal family is a business, let's face it, what sort of approach would you be taking?
I think I'd look at it like this, Sam. Like, if you're King Charles, you've come into this at a probably an age where he might have thought he might have been in that role a bit early, because the Queen obviously was amazing in what she's done, and she's very hard to fill her shoes. So the first thing I would not be doing is trying to be the Queen, right? because you're not going to be filling those shoes. But what he has, on, I think, on his side is he's had the advantage of seeing his mum from a leadership perspective. So he should have some of the qualities there you would think that she's got. But then he's also got this combination of people behind him. And I think it's Sir William, correct? He's next in line.
Yep.
So I think he needs to start promoting and pushing William and, you know, and or Harry, et cetera, up the scale a bit from a profile piece, because what he's got to be careful of, the Queen had a basically she was viewed as a safe pair of hands. They're all now panicking because she's not there, and it's Charles. Now, he's going to take a long way to try and replace that safe pair of hands, and he'll just take it on. But I think from a leadership, I'd be making quick profile plans behind me if I was him. And because I guess William and Harry in society's view of a modern, I guess, modern royal family would be viewed as there's more people that will respond, I guess, to William and Harry probably right now than to Charles. So that's how I'd be looking at it. So if I was Charles, I'd be saying, right, I've got the grey hair, I've got my mum's experience. However, staying relevant is bringing the younger crew through and starting to raise their profile now. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I was going to say, so the parallel in the real estate industry is I think some leaders still struggle with promoting the younger people in their team.
Absolutely, yeah.
But what you're saying here is that really, you know, like it's the next generation who are going to appeal to the Gen Zs and things like that. And so, you know, it's almost like you need to incubate some influence like in the younger generations.
Yeah, well, Sam, I'm 50. I've been doing this since I was 20 or 17, sorry, 33 years since I was like, but as in sales in since I was 20, but in real estate. So I'm not relevant for a lot of things in this industry than I was 20 years ago. But the people in my sales leadership team and in property management, and they're much more relevant than me. So what I'll do, I'll work out what I'm relevant for and get endorsed by my team, and I'll do the relevant things. And where I'm irrelevant, whether that might be I'm not good at social media and that sort of stuff, so I have someone doing that for me. But and not advising people on that either, I'm not that great at. So I've got the people to do that. And where the sales agents are more relevant with the younger sales leaders are more relevant with the younger sales agents, they'll look after them, and I'll mirror people that are more my vintage that want to. And that's how I think the royal team should be looking at doing that, because they got a big pool of people that they need to stay relevant. Then, okay, Charles and Camilla, with respect to both of them, are not really headline grabbers compared to. So if you want to keep the royal business in the marketplace, what's going to grab the headlines? That's how you got to look at it. Yeah.
Does that mean they've got to make friends with Harry and Meghan and get them back
So. No time better than the present, is it?
That's it. There's no Y in team, right?
That's right. So whether that's relevant or not, I think they should be seen to be having a swing at it, which they've done that quickly. But in terms of real estate leaders, I'd reach out like via this, and I know you've got a huge following in your business, Sam, around people listening to these podcasts. I'd strongly encourage, if you're a leader and you've been doing it a long time, you need to have a look if you're relevant still. Because a lot of people, the leaders don't really get told, you know, oh, I'm not going to tell them, they don't want to know. That it's easy to become irrelevant too. And I see leaders in my own journeys where they just haven't, they're not doing open homes anymore, and they're not talking to buyers, they're not talking to sellers. You can very quickly become irrelevant when you're not doing that, because the market is that the demand and the buyer behavior and the seller behavior is changing every month. They got So what worked 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago, unless you can show your team that you're doing what they're doing, you're not relevant, in my view.
Yeah, so we've sort of come full circle from where we started, which is, you know, like your big piece of advice to leaders is to get out the trenches, get out there on a Saturday, stand with your people, have a look at what's, have the conversations, look at what's really going on. That's pretty good. I mean, you know, like you could be a consultant for the royal family. I reckon that's pretty good advice for them too.
Thanks. I mean, it's easy when you're not involved, isn't it? I don't have to deal with Harry or William or Megan. That's easy. We can just sit there and pontificate from outside. It's great. But I was just saying, Sam, I mean, I've done this myself all the way. You can't lead and advise and coach and mentor, A, if you haven't done it yourself, B, if you're not doing it, and C, if you're reading from some textbook. It's very hard to do it. Like, you're not hand on heart. You can't. It's so, I do see a lot of principals build a business and they go, oh, now I can sit back and let everybody else run it. I haven't been able to do that in 25 years of leadership roles. I've never been able to sit back and let everyone else run it. The minute I've sat back or not sat back, the minute I haven't sort of been like I should be turning up there or going here, there's things have changed. The other thing is, though, I don't micromanage our people. So they've got a job, they do it. If they get stuck, they call me, but I'm not there telling them how to do it as well. I think that's really dangerous as well as leaders, especially with the generation, next generation or two down from me who are my leaders. They've come up with different expectations around leadership. So it's about giving them the tools, giving them the support and getting out of their way. And let them fall a few times. I don't mind some of my leaders hitting the wall a few times because that way, you know, if I stop them hitting the wall, they'll never learn how to grow.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Well, Matt, I think we'll wrap it up there. It's been a fabulous chat and you'll be back again in a few weeks' time with, you know, like a bit of an update on the market and stuff. So I want to thank you for coming on this journey with me because I think it's really fascinating to actually dig into the headlines and look at what's going on in the market. If there was one final piece of advice that you'd like to give people this week, what would it be?
I think have a look at your life, everyone, and have a good look at what you're doing each day if this is real estate we're talking about, and see how you can add more value to people around you. I think that's a big thing. A lot of people, you know, self-interest is the favorite in every horse race. I think if you stop back and you say, I'm going to spend 50% of my week adding value to other people around me, I reckon your business that you're currently running, owning, or whatever it may be, or in, even if you're a sales agent, add more value to people around me. I think your life will be completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. Great advice as always. Matt LaHood, thank you so much.
Thanks, I really appreciate it. Good on you. Take care.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Elevate Podcast with thanks to connectnow.com.au. Don't forget to get access to all of Elite Agent's premium resources, including a detailed episode guide for this podcast. Visit joineliteagent.com.